Beyond the Mic with Sean Dillon.
We're joined on the Star Line by singer, producer, platinum-selling film, and video director. Last time he was here, he was dealing with Osaka pop stars Ear Candy. Our old friend joins us back, breaking down a new volume of sugar, sweet, punk, power, rock, fun in Sweetie Candy, Vigilante. We welcome back John Caffiero.
Hey, Sean. It's great to be back. How are you?
Absolutely great, brother. Always great to have you here. Let's go Beyond the Mic. How did you come up with The Land of Hatchie Malachie?
The Land of Hatchie Malachie is an obscure children's song from the early 50s. It's been out of print for decades, and it was originally performed by Rosemary Clooney. And I just happened to hear it, God, I want to say maybe like 7 or so years ago, when my wife and I were just starting to kind of plan the Sweetie Candy Vigilante comic book series. And as soon as I heard it, it was on this Freeform radio show that was literally playing it from an old 78 RPM vinyl, or shellac rather. And as soon as I heard it, I just called out to her and I said, are you hearing this? This would be perfect for Sweetie. And I just immediately, because I have a background as a film director and pretty much apply that philosophy and that approach to everything that I do, be it directing a film, producing a comic book, producing music, managing a band, art directing, artwork, whatever it is that I do, I take that directorial point of view, and I just immediately could imagine these bizarre, comedic, dark humor, candy carnage happening with this psychotically sweet song playing. And so I immediately thought, oh, wow, The Land of Hatchie Malachie would be perfect if there was ever a Sweetie film. And when we did launch the comic book series in 2022, along with coinciding with Osaka pop stars record Ear Candy, I had done this power pop version of Sugar Sugar that came as a free download in the first issue of Volume 1. And that did very well. And thankfully, you know, an audience found the comic that has dark humor and liked this completely unique series. And after we finished the first volume, which was 6 issues, that's now collected and available in a Sweetie Candy Vigilante Volume 1 trade paperback, we set out to do the sequel. And that's Volume 2, Sweetie Candy Vigilante Volume 2, Issue Number 1, was released on Valentine's Day, simultaneously with The Land of Hatchie Malachie, the new single by Osaka pop star. And I just thought it would be a perfect theme song to come as a free download in the issue. And it actually weaves its way into the storyline as these new issues progress that people will see. And it's already even referenced in the finale of the first issue of the new volume.
And you take everything to 110%. No rest for the wicked, because you're always working.
That is true. Absolutely. There's always multiple projects going on, and I'm equally passionate about them all, and I put equal TLC and time into everything that I do, because it's all a labor of love in one way or another.
John, your wife created and wrote Sweetie Candy Vigilante. How important was it for you, as producer, editor, and art director for the series, to get her vision perfect? Especially because if you screw this up, you're on the couch.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you know, she, one day we were having dinner and she just told me about this idea that she had for this character, Sweetie, and for the title, Sweetie Candy Vigilante, and that she literally would make these candy weapons and fight, you know, bad guys using them with grisly results. And I thought it was great, and I encouraged her to write it, and I said, you should just write it, and I'll produce it, and we'll do it as an independent comic, and we'll see what happens. And so we set out and did that, and then once we had a number of issues ready to go, because I didn't want to have to deal with stress of deadlines and worrying about, is the material going to be ready in time? So we had a number of issues ready. I started to talk to some independent comic book companies. Always felt that Dynamite was going to be the right home for it. Dynamite is the same publisher as Red Sonja, Vampirella, Game of Thrones, Army of Darkness, James Bond 007, Barbarella, The Boys, and I just thought they would be the perfect home. And after talking to a number of different companies and speaking with Nick Barucci of Dynamite, it was apparent to me that they were the right home. And so we launched the series together, and like everything I do, I really want to make sure that it is the absolute best it can be. So I'm taking what I believe is a great script that I believed in from the very beginning, and then visualizing it to the best of my ability. And so far, people seem to really be digging it, and Suzanne is thrilled with the results, and so am I. And thankfully, audiences are too. I mean, we've gotten feedback from reviewers, comic reviewers, that have said things like, "Picture Willy Wonka, directed by Quentin Tarantino," and I love that, and that's pretty accurate. And there was another great one that was really on point and also very highly complimentary, which was like a Technicolor grindhouse film, a gory pop color epic reminiscent of the glory days of Heavy Metal magazine and late night cult films, endlessly imaginative. And I really take pride in everything I do, and I'm painstakingly pay attention to each and every detail to make sure that it's the best it can be. And again, that's the director in me, because I just feel that it's the director's responsibility to bring out the best in everybody on the project and to maximize the potential of the material and all of the resources. And I do that with everything I do, and certainly no short of that on Sweetie Candy Vigilante, the comic book series.
Why is Osaka Pop Star and Sweetie so complimentary of each other?
Thanks. I'm glad you feel that way. I mean, with Osaka Pop Star, I love for everything that we do to be a multimedia experience. And while the music is first and foremost to Osaka Pop Star, I love to have a whole world surrounding it that you could just escape into. And that's why with Ear Candy, for example, I took original Osaka Pop Star material and then paired it with doing covers by the Archies and the Monkees and the Partridge Family, because I felt that those were also bands that had this kinship in creating a whole world that you could become immersed into the way I like to with Osaka Pop Star. So I feel that the comic book and Osaka Pop Star are very well suited to each other because they are multifaceted. They both have a lot of different elements to them that lend themselves to that multimedia aspect. And Sweetie appeared on the cover of the Ear Candy record, and Osaka Pop Star appeared in the comic. So they're like peanut butter and chocolate.
Very true. How has punk rock changed you, and how have you changed punk rock?
Wow. Well, punk rock changed me in that I went from listening to Kiss and Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath to discovering the Ramones, and then that setting me on a whole different path. I still greatly still enjoy and appreciate all of those other classic rock bands, but punk rock really just became what spoke to me and sort of defined who I was and what I was feeling and what my persona was, in particular the Ramones. I really identified with them musically and stylistically. And so it definitely changed me because it set me on a path and it helped to kind of finalize and round out my creative process, my approach, and my creative personality, so to speak. In terms of how I've changed punk rock, well, I don't know that I've changed punk rock specifically, although I certainly like to think I've made some valid contributions to it by expanding on what I learned from the bands that I loved and putting my own spin on it that hopefully turns on a new generation to different things. But certainly I would think that the changes that I have made is in helping to keep the Ramones legacy alive in all of the different capacities that I've worked with them, and certainly, you know, helping to keep the Misfits moving forward and doing a number of different things leading up to and including the reunion of the original Misfits, which is something that I always believed was possible and had worked for roughly 15 years towards achieving that goal. And when it finally came to be, it was just something that fans of the band were elated by and people never thought was possible, and I always thought was possible. And I'm so glad and honored to be able to play a part in that and see it go down, because something that has always bothered me about the Ramones is that although I always idolized them as a kid and saw them as like the biggest rock stars in the world, they weren't necessarily treated like that during their lifetime. And sure, they had their devoted cult following, and in particular in South America, they were treated with the respect that they'd always deserved. But, you know, in America, it really took their deaths to one by one increase and enhance the potency of their legacy and make the world stand up and take notice. And to see the Misfits, while they're still young and vital and at the top of their game, get to experience what the Ramones only got posthumously is really an absolute pleasure. And coincidentally, one of the people who knew that I always had my eye on that prize of getting them back together was Joey Ramone, who used to encourage me and believed that I could make it happen.
I'd love to see a version, a punk rock version of Stop That Pigeon and Underdog, old 1970s cartoons.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you, although I would love to do Underdog and have it, there is a very cool punk version of the Underdog theme done by the Butthole Surfers.
I like that.
Yeah, and it's a little hard to find, but if you dig, you should be able to dig that one up, and it's a very good version.
I also love Reverend Horton Heat's version of Stop That Pigeon.
Yeah, of course.
If you're enjoying these conversations, please check out another Beyond the Mic episode to find more actors, artists, and people you need to know. We'd also appreciate a like and subscribe on the Good Pods app.
He is a man of many talents and is editor, producer, art director for Sweetie Candy Vigilante. Our friend John Caffiero joins us Beyond the Mic for the Rocking Eight. Eight random questions, answer with the first thing that comes to your mind. John, there's no pressure. Are you nearsighted or farsighted?
You know, I'm not really sure, but I can say I definitely need to get some new glasses. I am nearsighted.
What's the first album you ever bought?
Kiss Alive.
Well, since you were there for their final show, what's the best Kiss song of all time?
Yeah, I was. I don't know that it would be the best because there are so many cool ones, but one of my favorites would certainly be Love Gun.
How about the top four comics you had growing up?
Plop being number one, although I have to confess I only bought it for the covers. I never really thought much of what was going on in the interior, but the covers by Basil Wolverton are probably some of my favorite pieces of comic art in the world. Ghost Rider was always a favorite series of mine growing up. Let's see, three more tops. Fish Police was something that I only discovered in the 90s, which I think it was only released in the 90s. Actually, no, excuse me, the very late 80s. I got into Fish Police, which was an independent comic by a writer named Steve Moncuse, which I thought was brilliant, and I loved it. I read every issue cover to cover. Eventually, it got turned into an animated series by a network, and they completely, no pun intended, watered it down. And and changed it so dramatically that it was hardly recognizable, but the Fish Police series was fantastic. Flaming Carrot Comics was always a favorite in the 90s. Super Bizarre, definitely also an influence on my wife, Suzanne. She always loved Flaming Carrot as well. Bob Burden created that. And later he also had Mystery Men Comics, which was made into a feature film, which was also a really good movie. Flaming Carrot was probably his most famous property to his fans, but just probably far too bizarre to be a feature film. And coincidentally, Wildman Fisher, putting a little 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon in here, on the Dr. Demento front, Wildman Fisher recorded a theme song for Flaming Carrot because Bill Mooney and Robert Hamer, who are Art and Artie Barnes of Barnes and Barnes, creators of Fish Heads, were big comic book fans and would be at comic book conventions, met Bob Burden, were working with Wildman Fisher, and then made that connection happen. So those are certainly some of my favorite comics.
John, what's your favorite city tour stop?
Favorite city tour stop on the road?
Which city?
That's a good question. You know, I hate to say, well, are we talking present day or in the past?
Good choice.
In the past, even though it's my hometown, it would always be New York because there are just so many staples here. But one of my favorite places touring had been Scotland. Because in Scotland, it was just a really cool vibe, and fans were just really, really passionate about the music. And, you know, I felt like we were received in Scotland, like, bigger probably than anywhere else. But you know what? I know I keep changing it, but I'll have to say, now that I really think this through, favorite tour stop would certainly be Osaka, Japan. the namesake of Osaka pop star, and just so many cool places to check out that you just don't get to see every day because it's such a unique place and so much culture there that I love. So Osaka, Japan.
How about your best Halloween costume you wore growing up?
Favorite or best?
Your choice.
I'd say best probably, and if I'm not mistaken, it's the first Halloween costume I ever wore was a Ben Cooper Frankie of the Groovy Ghoulies costume.
John, is change easy for you?
Yeah, absolutely. As long as it's a change that I feel is for the better or rhythmically fitting into the direction that I'd like things to go. Otherwise, no.
So since we're talking sweetie candy vigilante, what's the candy bar you love?
Does it have to be a candy bar? My favorite candy are strawberry Twizzlers. And I will also say that the character Candy Wolf, who is Sweetie's licorice-loving lycanthrope and wolf-at-arms on her Candy Vigilante squad, is actually loosely based on me. My wife based the character Candy Wolf on me, which is why he is always eating red licorice.
Producer, editor, art director for Sweetie Candy Vigilante, our friend John Caffiero joins us beyond the mic for the back half. She's on a mission to make every dentist's dream house come true. You have stayed in New York City for this series, but would Sweetie make a trip to the Left Coast or anywhere else in the future?
Oh, yeah. Sweetie is really set on making the entire world a sweet place. She's based in New York, and she grew up in New York, and her family's sweet shop that she grew up in is based in the Village, but she's basically looking to expand first into all five boroughs of New York, then nationwide, and then ultimately worldwide. And she's already reaching worldwide audiences because the Sweetie Candy Vigilante has millions of followers on social media in the series, and she is really becoming quite a powerful influencer.
The debut issue comes with a free MP3 of the song The Land of Hatchie Malachie, a new never-before-released track by Osaka Popstar. Why was it important for you to give away the song? I know you're all about vertical integrations, but giving it away?
Because I just felt like I really approach a lot of the things I do as the fan or the consumer. And I just felt like, how fun would it be to go buy this incredibly bizarre, fun comic book and then hear the song that goes along with it that ties into the storyline and has the same vibe? Because again, you know, the song really, in my opinion, it's a perfect musical accompaniment to the issue, and it's the same vibe. It's like equally fun and equally bizarre. So yeah, I mean, you don't really make money on music these days anyway. It's just a matter of doing it because you enjoy it, and then maybe the other things that come with it hopefully can provide a level of income. But I just felt like creatively it was the right decision, and I'm really happy because I just feel like it just is a perfect marriage. And when you read the issue and the song goes along with it, it just helps to create a theater of the mind where you see the film version play out in your head. And that's only going to continue because Volume 2, The Land of Hatchie Malachie, is a theme that travels through the entire volume. Each volume is 6 issues. Volume 2, Issue 1 is out now, and Issue 2 comes out in early April, and then bi-monthly thereafter. But The Land of Hatchie Malachie will definitely continue to ring true as a theme throughout the whole volume. So I just felt it belonged there.
John, you're never thinking like the rest of the world. You have this vertical ideas that come across every platform. Why is this concept so easy for you, and how hard is it for others to accept?
That's a really good question, and it's difficult for me to answer. It comes really natural to me because there's just nothing like it's normal for me. I mean, it's very bizarre, yes, but for me, it's completely normal because I love bizarre, eclectic things. A lot of other people, when you're describing it to them, it's completely foreign, but that's what they like about it, because isn't it always cool to discover something new or get into something that's different from everything else? So Amen. Uniqueness has always come easy to me because I've always just been a unique person and I like unique things. And I love to turn people on to unique things and hopefully broaden their horizons or maybe turn them on to something that they might not have discovered or been into otherwise. So I guess that's the best way I could answer it. I hope it's a thorough enough.
It's acceptable. When you're working, what do you do to relax? In other words, how does your wife pull you away for date night?
Wow, you know, I'm kind of always working. Even when I'm relaxing, I can't help but start to think about things. And I might be relaxing and watching a movie and then dictate a note to myself of something that popped into my head. Or we could be watching TV, and if my wife has a laptop open, I'll say, do me a favor, send me an email that reminds me to do this. So I'm kind of like a doctor that is always on call in some respects. But I love to, you know, to watch movies. I love to listen to music. I love to appreciate art. I love collecting artwork, and I have a really cool art collection, certain like collectibles and props. So I just love to surround myself with the things that I love, and I definitely get a lot of joy out of that. And while I do take a little bit of time to relax here and there, it always kind of feels like stolen moments because I'm always doing multiple projects, and there's a lot to be done.
Very good.
Oh, and you know what? I'll tell you one other thing that I like to do for just for total downtime, and I can't really work when I'm doing that, is play pinball.
I like that.
So love pinball, and have a Led Zeppelin pinball machine and a Godzilla pinball machine from Stern, who makes the best pinball machines in the business. Next up will be their Jaws pinball machine that's just being released now.
And soon, a Sweetie Candy Vigilante pinball game available soon.
Well, you know, we have actually talked about it half jokingly, but they're, you know, they do seem interested, and I think it'll take the Sweetie feature film before it finally gets made. But Sweetie Candy Vigilante is on Stern's radar, and they have all the issues, and they dig it, and always super complimentary about it. So my Stern family, if you're listening out there, here's yet another vote from Sean Dillon, who's looking for a Sweetie Candy Vigilante pinball machine.
I can only hope.
Sure.
John, how's music touched your life?
Music has touched my life in that it has opened up my mind to a lot of different things, including a lot of different sounds and styles. And I really do like all kinds of music. In fact, you know, another thing that I do like to do, which is very relaxing and I can't work at the same time, is go see the New York Philharmonic. I love orchestral scores and I love classical music, even though I'm a total punk head and make punk music. I like everything from classical to punk and everything in between. So music has changed my life in that it's made me appreciate a lot of different sounds, a lot of different talent, a lot of different styles. And even culturally, I think that it's kind of shaped who I am as a person, in maybe point of view that I may have, or open-mindedness about different things and different cultures, and different styles, and even the way that I look. I mean, you know, as a kid, I always wanted to look like one of the Ramones, and even though I've certainly got my own look, there's that undercurrent of it, and all the things that I love definitely have played into my personality in one way or another, even if it's subliminal.
The creative force behind Sweetie Candy Vigilante, John Caffiero, joined us beyond the mic for one big question. John, when you go out on the road, how do you balance all of your projects, even though you sleep only 4 hours a night?
Via email, phone calls, and bringing a laptop with me wherever I go. And my iPhone. I'm always on.
He's always on call, loves strawberry twizzlers, and wants you to read Sweetie Candy Vigilante. John Caffiero, thanks for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thanks, Sean. Anytime, always a pleasure. And I hope if your listeners are interested, if you want to know more about Osaka Pop Star or check out our animated videos, please visit osakapopstar.com, O-S-A-K-A, popstar.com. And for more about Sweetie Candy Vigilante, please check out sweetiecandyvigilante.com. It's S-W-E-E-T-I-E.
And that, my friends, is Beyond the Mic.
If you're enjoying these conversations, please check out another Beyond the Mic episode to find more actors, artists, and people you need to know. We'd also appreciate a like and subscribe on the Good Pods app.